I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm pleased to have my co-host, Dave Allen, joining us today as we're going to bring you our opinions and commentary on the political and economic issues of today. And today is Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy hump day, Melody.
What am I going to do when you forget that? Just once you're going to forget that. You know that.
Oh, I have absolute confidence that you'll remind me.
Okay. Well, today we do have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. But first, let's go ahead and get to the market report today. And I'm not sure how the markets traded today. I'm sure they traded very light. I didn't look at the volumes today. I'm assuming because of the holiday weekend or the holiday tomorrow anyway, everything will be trading on Friday. But gold held steady at 1418 today. And the numbers just aren't making sense. So I'm not sure if they've updated futures contracts. I'll look at those to see where they're holding at. But we're looking at 1418 today, silver at 1537. Platinum was up 10 at 845, and palladium was up 10 at 1579. Now, the reason I said this is because it shows that the USDX, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, was up 1.09, but it was like that all day, and yet I'm reading various articles were saying there's weakness on the dollar, so it doesn't show like there's any weakness to mine and crude oil. So I don't know if my site that I'm looking at where I get my numbers is just off. Maybe they began their holiday a little early, perhaps. But so they're looking at, the USDX at 97.85 and crude oil at 57.34. So let's just see what the paper markets are doing. And hopefully my computer will not freeze. The Dow was up 179 points at 26,966. The NASDAQ... Do I still have you, Dave?
I am here.
Okay. The NASDAQ was up 61 points at 8,170. The S&P was up 22 at 2,995. The Dow, the S&P, and I guess the NASDAQ, they all closed at a record high today. 10-year yield still holding at 195. The gold futures, I think it was still showing August contracts. Let's see. 1420, so a little bit higher than the spot market. And but, you know, basically no change today. So strange trading today. But, of course, the markets were strong. Again, heading into a three-day weekend, coming out of G20 meeting, what did you expect? And we'll talk about that. You could place bets on this one and win. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, I'm always pleased to welcome our good friend Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Dave.
Hey there.
Thought we'd talk about, it's a question. Are Americans settling for less with healthcare? It's a question people ask lately. So I thought we'd kind of take a little snapshot of a couple of areas that may give us a clue. If we look really carefully, sometimes we can see prescription medicines that put patients at risk of getting things like cancer. So we know the mortality rate for cancer is pretty bad. So drugs that would increase a risk of developing cancer really should not be a part of healthcare. So in October 2018, this article appeared in the British Medical Journal. It was warning people of the common blood pressure medicines that can increase the risk of cancer. These are the ACE inhibitor drugs, very popular. There are several kinds of them. And they've only been cleared for use, safe use, in a short period of time. And that means less than 12 months. Yet we see patients are put on these medications for years. Previous studies have revealed that this drug, the ACE inhibitors, were considered a problem, but they said, the case studies were too small to even matter. But McGill University out of Canada investigated the drug, and they found out it gives patients lung cancer and lung tumors. Their findings did get published, and cardiologists the world over should already know about this. So there's really no excuses that this research unit was too small of a sample to matter and that they didn't follow the patients long enough. McGill did it right. Their study included 992,061 young people starting at the age of 18 years of age and older who had no previous incidence of cancer but were treated with the antihypertension ACE inhibitor drugs. They followed the patients from January 1995 to December 2015, so that's a 20-year period. Some patients did drop out of the study, but 449,016 remained, and the physicians were pronouncing 7,952 of them with lung cancer. They concluded that the incident of lung cancer occurred within a 5-year period of using three of the most popular ACE inhibitor drugs. Now, the drug causes, they say, 1.78 people in 1,000 to get the cancer. So there's over 1 million people in the UK taking this heart medicine, and there, according to the American Heart Association, we have 75.5 million people that are on these types of drugs. And the percentages out of the McGill study said 12 to 25 million people are going to get lung cancer within 5 to 10 years of taking this drug. And in 2008, the U.S. Medicaid and Medicare spent $309 million on these ACE inhibitor drugs. Any questions there?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Here is a quote from the McGill University study that was in the October 26, 2018 British Medical Journal. They said, "We concluded that by taking ACE inhibitor medications, it increases the risk of lung cancer by 14% within 5 years, and if taking the drug 10 years or more, the risk is 31%. End of quote. So also, you got to look at these drugs. I tell people, look at the medication, see if there's off-market uses for them that doctors are totally legal to do. So not only is the Ramipril ACE inhibitor drug used to treat blood pressure, congestive heart failure, but they also use it sometimes for kidney disease and diabetes. So you got to look at that. Here's Dr. Asim Mahorta. He's a cardiologist with the National Health Service of the UK. He says 1 in 3 people of 75 years of age are admitted to hospitals due to adverse drug reactions, and 1/4 of these patients die. Now, that's an interesting statement, because I want to also look now at your death certificates. Interesting thing, because vital statistics often use death certificates to chart death by disease, but we know a lot of this information is skewed due to a lot of reasons, including prescription medicines are the culprit but never listed. According to VitalCheck, which is the leader in government vital records, they say physicians often refuse to sign death certificates if they're unsure or they're suspicious of the cause of death. So if a physician's unsure about the cause of death, they would use words on the certificate as probable or presumed as a description for death. Also, physicians also should take into account all the conditions and prioritize those conditions if there's multiple medical issues in the mix. So for instance, a medical examiner should determine if the patient died with rather than of their disease. So that would mean they didn't die of heart failure. They died of the drugs they were taking for heart failure. You get my drift?
Yeah, I sure do.
Okay. So did the medication side effects cause the demise or premature death? That question should always be looked at. Now, what family members need to look closely for is the use of terms on a death certificate that should never be there. So they should never use the cause as infirmity or advanced age. That's not a reason for death. Now, an autopsy could be necessary to determine the cause of death, but overall, get this, the leading cause of death in a majority of death certificates in the United States, they list heart disease or cancer, when it really should list medical errors in medications. Think about that. Let me read you a quote by Martin McCary, MD, oncologist with Johns Hopkins Transplant Center. He says, too often the healthcare system silences people around a problem, so people don't want to talk about it. And VitalCheck says the wrong cause of death may appear on a death certificate when it is unknown or could have been the result of more than one health issue. And then this is the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health. They say the high error rate on death certification has been documented in multiple prior studies. So they know they got an issue here. And in the state of New York, Bob Anderson, he's with the National Center for Health Statistics, he noticed, get this, 40% of the death certificates were listing heart disease as the cause of death. That's a high rate. So he says, after investigating 70 hospitals, we found they overreported coronary heart disease by 91%. And we found that 1 in 3 death certificates were listing the wrong cause of death. That's incredible. Also, this is from Bob Anderson as well. He says, we really don't have a good idea, a good sense of how accurate death certificates are. Based on well-conducted studies, we estimate nationwide the cause of death is inaccurate at least 20 to 30% of the time. Wow.
You know, that really is amazing. Because, but again, who's going to hold anybody accountable? No one.
Well, and, you know, this isn't just isolated in New York. Missouri in 2017 found a similar problem where their hospitals were reporting incorrect causes of death almost 50% of the time in the same year. And Maine reported 33 to 40% inaccuracy on their death certificates. And Vermont said 51% were major errors as the cause of death on their death certificates. And they weren't listing that. Emily Carter, she's with the Maine Medical. She says, most medical examiners train at the same or similar institution. The true extent of the problem is results vary widely, and it's really hard to accurately assign a cause of death. Hmm. So why do they use this in murder trials? Why do they use death certificates then for insurance payoffs, criminal trials, civil estate litigation, and malpractice lawsuits if 20 to 50% of them are inaccurate? Just imagine the implications.
Wow. And, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you know, who cares? You're dead.
Well,
but, you know, it does have a lot of, you know, implications, as you said.
It influences care moving forward. It does. And here is, I want to talk about the forms, because a lot of people say, well, you know, let me ask you, who fills out the death certificate? Do you know?
Isn't it the coroner?
That's what people think. Most people think the medical examiner fills out the death certificate, but they do not.
If he does an autopsy, but if you don't get an autopsy, wouldn't it be the
funeral?
They don't fill out the paperwork. They sign it, but they don't fill it out. That job of filling in the blanks is given to the lowest on the totem pole, and they usually have no training. So, and we also have this new electronic system of death certificates, which doesn't list every possible cause of death. So you have to click something to fill in the blank. So you're left with either guessing or selecting the closest inaccurate cause of death. Here's a quote from Barbara Waxelman. She's a medical doctor with Tri Health Center in Cincinnati. She says this, early in my career, I was inexperienced in filling out death certificates. In one instance where the patient died of sepsis blood poisoning, the electronic system required I enter the cause of the sepsis. I was unsure of the cause, and I made my best guess. Many times we don't know why the patient died, but the system forces us to put something down, and it may not be an accurate diagnosis. And then she goes on to say, in one study, nearly half of physician residents in New York City said they had knowingly reported an inaccurate cause of death due to either ignorance or as the cause was forced to pick something from a limited list, end of quote. Outrageous. Really.
Seriously. True.
It's affecting everything. Now, so why do death certificates rarely list the cause of death to be maybe the result of a medication? Well, for instance, a patient with, like I said, heart disease on heart medicines would be listed as a casualty of heart disease on the death certificate and not from maybe premature death by the heart drugs themselves. And according to the U.S. National Library of Medicine and Institute of Health, there are a number of deaths by drugs. So in 2007, they actually conducted research that he titled Surveillance of Prescription Drug-Related Mortality Using Death Certificate Data. And they list overdoses, of course, opioid crisis and all that, but they also stated there was an increased number of deaths that were caused by antidepressants, anticoagulants, and antibacterial medications, but they don't go down on the death certificate as they should. According to them, they said in 2003, there was a 55% increase in deaths listed as having a prescription medication as the underlying cause. Okay, so they're not blaming the drug when they list it that way. they may say it's the underlying cause, but when it goes into the category of what you died from, it's going to list maybe, you know, congestive heart failure. And also Dr. Amsine Morhorta, cardiologist, National Health Services, he says institutions like the universities and medical journals and physicians collude wittingly or unwittingly with the medical industry for financial gain. So they can't have drugs being blamed for all these deaths or people wouldn't be taking them. And here's another quote from him. He says, we need to de-prescribe and we have full access to all raw data from the drug clinical trials for independent scrutiny. This will encourage pharmaceutical-sponsored research to be conducted at a higher ethical level. I personally regard all industry-sponsored studies as marketing until proved otherwise. So he doesn't even believe the journal articles on the drugs, you know, because they're really ads written by the drug company.
Wow.
So I would say, you know, the data's there, and we could determine, you know, what the major cause of most of the deaths are, premature or otherwise, in our country and the civilized world, really. And it's mostly by prescription medicines. It's scary. It really is. Now, the majority of people who are, well, they're not taught to take care of their health by natural means, and they are relying on this healthcare system, but it's riddled with deception and corruption. So patients, in effect, do not get the best care, and they do put their lives at risk. They're settling for substandard care, really are.
Well, the thing of it is they trust their doctor, and they trust the doctor does the research, but they don't because they're swamped.
Well, yeah, and they're just reading the journal articles. They don't make the drugs. They don't test the drugs. They're just going by what they read, and so they're duped as well. And if any of them do independent research to dig, those are the ones you want as your doctor, because there's the ones that take you off that stuff. So, but we're having a big sale. 4th of July sale ends tomorrow, 20% off orders of $50 or more. So if you want to take control of your wellness, give us a call at Apothecary Herbs at 866-229-3663 or visit us on the web at thepowerherbs.com. Yeah, stay away from those ACE inhibitors.
What's your number again, Wendy?
866-229-3663. 866-229-3663. That's toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, thepowerherbs.com. I hope you guys have a good holiday and be safe out there.
Happy 4th to you as well.
Happy Independence Day. And anything special you're doing?
I've got a couple of my kids coming over with their significant others, you know, girlfriends, boyfriend, and we're going to have a little bit of a cookout dinner time. So, yeah,
wonderful.
Something like that.
All right. Well, you enjoy. And ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and we're heading into Independence Day tomorrow. I hope everyone is safe, as we talked about with Wendy going into the program. But let's get through some of this news for today. I know everyone's out there already, you know, cranking up the grills and everything like that. But first, let's look at the job creation. 102,000 new positions in June. And, of course, this is according to the monthly report from ADP and Moody's Analytics. And that's one thing we do know. This is usually wrong. It doesn't match the government numbers. But markets do trade based on these numbers. And but this was it missed the meager 135,000 estimate from economists that was surveyed by Dow Jones. And of course, we know that it comes off the weak May growth of just 41,000. The May number was revised upward from the initially reported 27,000. So ADP says 102. I'm guessing government's going to come in. I think they're going to come in about 128 is my estimate. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Write that number down, Dave. But, of course, this is another letdown for the more widely watched on payroll farms coming Friday from the Labor Department. I guess 128,000, 128, they're expecting to show 165,000. And Mark Zandi, the Moody's chief economist, said the economy's growth rate is significantly slowing, and he thinks the risks are rising, that it's going to stall out, Dave.
Well, Zandi added, Melody, that job growth has slowed sharply in recent months as businesses have turned more cautious in their hiring. Small businesses are the most nervous, he says, especially in the construction sector and at brick-and-mortar retailers. Indeed, companies with fewer than 50,000 employees saw another setback in June, with payrolls falling by 23,000 after a significant decline of 52,000 the previous month. Now, businesses with fewer than 20 employees were particularly hard hit, subtracting 37,000 jobs. Now, on the upside, job creation was fairly strong among bigger businesses. Companies with 50 to 499 employees posted growth of 60,000, while large businesses, that is, those with more than 500 or more employees, added 65,000.
Well, you know, Dave, if you look at the industry level, construction fell by 18,000, and I think that's an important number. You had natural resources and mining, they lost 4,000. And what I find interesting is manufacturing added 7,000. That's all great that manufacturing added 7,000, but it just kind of offsets the U.S. manufacturing activity last month fell to its lowest level in nearly 3 years. So the manufacturing activity is slowing, but yet they're still hiring. So, you know, kind of, again, one of those mixed pictures that we often see with government numbers. But the Conference Board's measure of consumer sentiment in June fell to its lowest level in nearly 2 years. And of course, yes, the tariffs and the expectations are dimming for any new job growth. So there remains 1.6 million more jobs than workers counted among the unemployed, a record high. The tight labor market has produced only modest boosts in wages. And we didn't see a final number on actually the true out of people work that gave up. We'll probably see that on Friday, those numbers. Right, Dave? Will we see those on Friday?
Yeah, all we might even see them later today.
All righty. The 10-year Treasury note fell to its lowest level since November of 2016. We've seen it slide below the 2% on continuing expectations that the central banks around the world are going to respond to this slowing global economy with, of course, more and more monetary stimulus. And a little after this morning, 8 o'clock Eastern time this morning, the yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note was lower at around 1.95, off a low of 1.939 that it hit in overnight trading. So it's still holding at that 1.95 level. So, you know, and again, we see this. You know, you see these yields drop because you see the world is snapping up the U.S. government debt. And this came on the back of the European Council nominating Christine Lagarde to head the European Central Bank. And, of course, we all know her by she has headed up the IMF since 2011. Was she just nominated or is she in?
No, just nominated. Okay. Just yesterday, I believe. Many viewed the choice of Lagarde as a signal that Eurozone rates will remain low for the foreseeable future as the central bank there tries to foster inflation and GDP growth in the region. Europe has seen markedly lower GDP growth relative to that of the U.S. in recent years. The German 10-year bond fell to its lowest level in recorded history today at -0.399%. Boggles the mind, Melody. You know, fears of an economic slowdown in Europe were also exacerbated after the U.S. government on Monday threatened to impose $4 billion of additional tariffs on Eurozone goods. Over that dispute over aircraft subsidies. Now, the U.S. Trade Rep released a list of products, including Italian cheese, olives, and whiskey, that could be targeted with new duties on top of those already implemented in April.
Well, I got a question for you, Dave. If the German 10-year bond fell to its lowest level at -0.399%, how low is that going to go before they decide, I don't want to pay them anymore? I mean, they put their money there because they feel they have no alternative?
Indeed. Yeah.
So how low is it going to go? Because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, all that money that's sitting there holding negative rates, if gold gets to a certain level, guess where they're going to run to? And that's all governments. That's all government treasury bonds and boons and whatever you want to call them. Eventually, they're going to be running, I would think.
Yeah, I guess these institutional bond funds and pension funds just don't want to park their money anywhere else. I got to believe that it can't go much lower, or there's, you know, it's not going to take much for a run on bonds and money in general in Germany. But you know, as you know, it's not a cop out. It's, you know, we don't know. These are interesting times, as we well know. And who'd have thought that. You know, the market would have permitted rates to fall to close to -0.4%. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. It really is. Well, you know, you were talking before my question, you were talking about the list of products that the U.S. trade was going to be placing. And this new wave of proposed duties comes amid a 15-year dispute at the WTO over these aircraft subsidies given to U.S. aerospace manufacturer Boeing and its European rival Airbus. So the Treasury also caught a bid from President Trump, picked up... Oh, go ahead and you continue, Dave.
Oh, no, I just... Treasury also caught a bid after President Trump picked two nominees likely to support easier monetary policy at the Fed. We'll talk a little bit more about one of them, Judy Shelton, in a little bit. But both of his intended nominees, Christopher Waller, who's an economist at the St. Louis Fed, and Judy Shelton, who now works in Europe, are thought to be advocates of lower rates, which could give a boost to future job creation numbers that we mentioned earlier.
Are we going to talk about who she works for?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll save it, ladies and gentlemen, so you have to stay tuned.
Absolutely.
To listen to it. But mortgage apps, after several weeks of volatility, had mortgage rates, they calmed down. Excuse me. And that offered little incentive for, again, homeowners or buyers to make a move. Total mortgage application volume, flat last week compared with the previous week. And, you know, this is all according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Volume fell 0.1% for the week, but was 41% higher than the same week 1 year ago. And, of course, thanks to a far more robust refinance market. Applications to refinance a home loan, that decreased a little bit, though, 1%, but they were still 93% higher than the same week 1 year ago. It's amazing what a hold on rates will do for decisions.
Yeah, I guess timing continues to be everything. You know, Joel Kahn, who's an economist with the Mortgage Bankers, we quote him fairly regularly in this report, said that in a week of mixed mortgage rate movements across the various loan types, the 30-year fixed rate finished slightly higher than last week, but was still close to lows last seen in 2016. Mortgage apps to purchase a home were up 1% for the week and 10% higher compared with the same week 1 year ago. Now, purchase demand is stronger this year thanks to lower rates, but supply is still really weak, especially for more affordable homes. Number of homes for sale nationally fell slightly last month compared with a year ago, the first annual decline in inventory since last September, that according to Redfin.
You know, we talked about, I mentioned this briefly yesterday about how this housing slump is pointing to a recession, but we really didn't get into it yesterday. And he says that the current housing backdrop is similar, of course, to recent economic slumps, with several metrics consistent with the possibility of a late 2019 or an early 2020 recession. And it's the data on a single family home sales through May of 2019 that confirms housing markets in all regions in the country are weakening. And this is all coming from the St. Louis Fed, William Edmonds. He also added that the severity of the housing downturn appears comparable across regions. In all cases, it's similar to the periods before the 1990-91 and the 01 recessions. Specifically, he looks at sales numbers for the 12 months ending in May compared with the average over the past 3 years. So he uses the 2019 as a plausible month for peak growth and then looks at how far back from the peak was the first month in which sales fell below their three-year average in the previous three sessions.
Yeah, boring, ladies and gentlemen, but Emmons says that process has been a reliable indicator from the housing market for when the next recession is due. And that's why we're telling you about it, you know, usually about a year away, according to Emmons, at least, you know, consistent with historical trends. You know, and as we mentioned the other day, a recent survey from Bankrate.com, ordinary Americans like you and me, many of us believe we're already in the midst of a recession. Still a good chunk of us feel one is coming in 6 months or 1 year. Now, in previous recessions, the first negative month respectively came 23, 10, and 21 months before the peak. You know, that would put the current pattern within the historical range. In addition to the sales numbers, though, Emmons said that current mortgage rates, inflation-adjusted house prices, and residential investments' contribution to economic growth are similar to patterns that preceded the most recent three recessions. Single-family home sales, he says, work best as an indicator because the other metrics are national in nature and thus don't reflect whether the deterioration has spread through all regions.
You know, I want to get to, before we head into the break, about Judy Shelton, because I think she's an important figure if she becomes one of the Federal Reserve Board governors. And she is one of them, Judy Shelton. President Trump has selected one of the minority of mainstream economists. And what's interesting and important about her is she supports a return to the gold standard and is critical of central bank activity. Shelton, who serves as the U.S. Executive Director at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, wrote as recently as last year in support of pegging the dollar to gold prices. Of course, President Trump announced his intention to nominate both Shelton and St. Louis Fed economist Christian Waller yesterday. But Shelton's unorthodox monetary beliefs is likely going to draw questions from the senators who ultimately need to approve Shelton and Waller to the Fed board. But we do know that Trump does like gold.
yes, an interesting pair of choices here, Melody. You know, much more likely, I believe, you know, to get the necessary votes in the Senate for confirmation, although certainly not a given. Now, you know, in a post published by the libertarian think tank Cato Institute last year, Shelton drew a comparison between cryptocurrencies and gold. You know, she wrote, if the appeal of cryptos is their capacity to provide a common currency and to maintain a uniform value for every issued unit, we need only consult historical experience to ascertain that these same qualities were achieved through the classical international gold standard. And she continues here, in proposing a new international monetary system linked in some way to gold, America has an opportunity to secure continued prominence in global monetary affairs. Now, the choice of Shelton may hint at Trump's growing frustration with Fed leaders and the direction of the Fed's monetary policy. You think a little bit?
And you know, how many times have I said it on this program? They are going to have to link gold to the monetary system, and they already have a basket of currencies. It'll be changed somewhat. But what better way to stabilize world currencies than to attach it to gold? I mean, we got an in because, what, 90% of world transactions are done in the U.S. dollar. So if they, so even if you put gold in there, we still come out as number one. It will even be more difficult to replace it. And we'll be right back. We're going to finish this up because it is very interesting and very important to our future of our money. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And, you know, heading into the break, we were talking about Shelton, the possible President Trump announced his intention to nominate Shelton for this position. And, you know, we know Trump has argued that higher interest rates and so-called quantitative tightening has capped GDP growth. It's also dampened the U.S. position in trade deliberations with Beijing. And Shelton, we know she's no fan of the Feds, also recently argued against an overly active central bank. Questioned in a recent interview whether the U.S. central bank should lower rates, the answer is yes. When you have an economy primed to grow because of reduced taxes, less regulation, dynamic energy, and trade reforms, you want to ensure a maximum access to capital. The Fed's practice of paying banks to keep money parked at the Fed in deposit accounts instead of going into the economy is unhealthy and distorting. The rate should come down quickly as the practice is phased out. You know, I like the gold part of her, but Dave, you end up in trouble when you continue to you can't continue to reduce taxes. You can't continue to do less regulation. You can't continue to have free money. And what about the people? We'd like to keep our money parked at the banks and get a decent rate of return. You know, a little more safe, less volatile place to park our money. So they're, again, who are they really concerned about? It isn't the people of this country. So I don't know if that's good that's not good policy, because it just continues to grow. The two kind of go against each other. When I think of gold backing a currency, it brings stability. It brings accountability. And when you're doing all these other things, that's not being accountable. So those two thoughts, to me, don't go together.
Yeah, I'm not sure she's calling for less taxes, less regulation. I just think she's saying that in the context of, because this is the environment we live in, you know, and coupled with, you know, wanting the goal of having more access to capital, I think she uses that as a point to criticize, you know, the Fed's practice of, you know, paying member banks to keep their money with the Fed. It might be mincing words there, but I believe that, virtually all listeners would agree with your position. I just think that I have a feeling Shelton would hold the same position. But anyway.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's interesting, and it's a great topic of conversation. We'll just have to wait to see who gets in. I'll see how much dirt they can dig up on her.
Oh, geez. Could be an interesting confirmation hearing in any event, presumably sometime this summer.
Yeah. All right, let's move on, and let's just go ahead and get to the Brevity is Golden. And I think this is a little interesting. It's a little light. It's a little fun heading into the holiday. And Brevity is Golden. We do this on a weekly basis. It's our weekly segment. And in an unusual twist today, the piece is about asteroids. And yes, gold. Dave, take it away.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Melody mentioned the other day that NASA's eyeing up a nearby asteroid that contains enough gold to make everyone on Earth a billionaire. Psyche 16, it's called, is nestled between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter and is made of solid metal. You know, as well as gold, the mysterious object's loaded with heaps of platinum, iron, and nickel. In total, it's estimated that Psyche's various metals, I don't know how they've determined this. I guess, you know, they know its size, and I guess, you know,
the weight of the metals.
Yeah, and the weight, they assume that, you know, that it's, and I guess they've conducted tests that lead them to believe it's, you know, 100% metal. In any event, they estimate that Psyche's various metals are worth 10,060 quadrillion dollars. That's a lot of precious metals, Melody. It means if we carried this asteroid back to Earth, or at least, you know, all of the gold and other precious metals, it would destroy commodity prices and cause the world's economy, worth about $75 trillion, to simply collapse. We've known about Psyche 16 for a while, but its potential to cause havoc on Earth was recently touched upon by a veteran miner. Scott Moore, who heads up Eurosun Mining, said the sheer amount of gold in the asteroid would threaten to throw the gold industry into chaos. The Titans of Gold, as he calls them, now control hundreds of the best producing properties around the world. But the 4 to 5 million of ounces of gold they bring to the market every year pales in comparison to the conquests available in space. NASA's launching a mission to probe the asteroid in 2022, dubbed the Discovery Mission. It will arrive at Psyche 16 4 years later, roughly. But bringing back an asteroid of this value could completely wipe out our global economy. Fortunately, the space agency is taking the trip for scientific purposes and isn't planning on conducting any mining.
Of course not.
Yes. Arizona State University researchers say that Psyche 16 was actually founded in 1852 by Italian astronomer Annabelle de Gasparis, who named it after the ancient Greek goddess of the soul. What gives the asteroid Psyche great scientific interest is that it's made of metal. It appears to be composed of one of the building blocks of the sun's planetary system and could provide clues to how our own planet formed. The asteroid is, you know, more likely a survival of violent hit-and-run collisions common when the solar system was forming. Now, every world explored so far by humans, you know, except Jupiter and Saturn, has a surface of ice or rock or a mixture of two. In any event, two space mining companies, backed by big-name celebrities, of course, are gearing up for a gold rush after asteroid ownership was made legal in 2015. Go figure.
Go figure.
Deep Space Industries and Planetary Resources, they're two companies, each have their eyes on the 2011 discovered UW-158 asteroid. It's twice the size of the Tower of London, and estimated worth of up to $5.7 trillion. Melody, who needs Andrew Lang and universal basic income when we have 16 Psyche, right? And apparently, you know, what is it, UW-158. In any event, with a worldwide population closing in on $7.8 billion, Psyche's 10,060 quadrillion dollars worth of gold could theoretically give every single person on Earth a good head start on their retirement savings plan with $1,359,000,000 apiece. That's $1.3 billion for each man, woman, and child everywhere. Talk about an international imperative, Melly. And that is today's Brevity is Golden.
Wow, that really is amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and like, oh, we're not going to mine it. Then why would you spend all that money going there, taking 4 years to, you know, it's just...
I can see a future summer blockbuster movie, you know, and instead of the asteroid that, you know, would be, you know, directed right at the Earth. You know, it's, you know, the one that would make us all billionaires.
Well,
but at,
you know,
at what cost and consequences?
But you know what? We know Japan, they were firing on asteroids just pretty recent. So maybe... maybe they have their own intent, seeing who can get there first. And
man.
But, you know, if they brought all that to the Earth and it destroyed the world economies, we'd all have $1 billion to go out and spend, so we'd just restart the economies, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like a plan. I have a feeling a lot of people would agree.
Who would be minting all that money, though?
Well, that's a good question. We could... sort of reinvent the world, reinvent our nation, whatever. I don't know what happens. Again, the unintended consequences, while fascinating, are sort of scary.
Well, you know, the U.S. trade deficits, let's get you back to something. U.S. trade deficits widened by more than forecast to a five-month high. We continue to see imports surge the most since 2015. And the gap increased 8.4% in May to $55.5 billion. April's level was bigger than previously reported. And this all comes from the Commerce Department. The median estimate of economists that was surveyed by Bloomberg called for a deficit of $54 billion. We saw imports jump 3.3%, exports rose 2%, and that's the most in a year. And, of course, the one that everyone is watching, the goods trade gap with China widened to $30.1 billion. So the report suggests net exports were on track to drag down the pace of expansion this second quarter, after giving up that big boost in the first quarter. Let's see if there's anything else. Chinese imports and exports both surged, potentially reflecting companies rushing shipments ahead of President Trump's latest increase in levies that were announced back in May, Dave.
Yeah, I think that's the crux of that story. I mean, there's also some interesting numbers in there about, you know, the grounding across the world of Boeing's 737 MAX model and how that's weighing on the economy. You know, civilian aircraft exports rose to $3.1 billion in May. The department announced still the second lowest monthly total in 7 years. Overall exports totaled a little over $210 billion, reflecting gains in passenger cars, soybeans, interestingly, and capital and consumer goods, while imports were $266 billion, boosted by crude oil, cars, capital goods, and consumer goods.
You know, we were talking about the dollar earlier, and I just saw this headline. We want to talk about tariffs on Vietnam. I don't know if this has a time where this was released. It just says today. It's from AP. And I guess President Trump has made a statement that, you know, we always know that he accuses China and Europe of big currency manipulators. And he's now saying that the United States should match that effort. And so... that's kind of interesting. In a tweet, the president said, if America doesn't act, the country will continue being the dummies who sit back and politely watch as other countries continue to play their games, as they have for so many years. Trump's own Treasury Department in May found that no country meets the criteria of being labeled a currency manipulator. Mm. So kind of interesting. And that goes against, you know, my best friend, Larry Kudlow, because he's a strong dollar advocate. So that means there's a little, I think with Trump's tweet, I'd have to say, and something else that happened a couple weeks ago, I said Kudlow's on his way out. So I'd have to continue with my thought. The next guy going is going to be Larry Kudlow. But anyway, we'll see. U.S. slaps 400% tariffs on steel imports from Vietnam and steel imports. And in doing so, it has accused some businesses of shipping products from Southeast Asia nations to evade the levies and further escalation of tension between the two trading partners. In three preliminary circumvention rulings on Vietnamese steel, the Commerce Department said certain products produced in South Korea and Taiwan were shipped to Vietnam for minor processing before being exported to U.S. as corrosion-resistant steel products and cold-rolled steel. So custom officials have been ordered to collect cash deposits at rates as high as 456% on imports of the steel products that were produced in Vietnam using material from South Korea and Taiwan.
So, oh, tisk, tisk, tisk. Well, you know, the president did describe Vietnam last week as almost the single worst abuser of everybody when asked if he wanted to impose tariffs on the nation. Vietnam's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, you know, didn't immediately respond to that. But Rob Carnell, who's the Asia-Pacific chief economist at ING Bank, said he doesn't think it's surprising that companies are trying and will continue to try to route products through countries such as Vietnam to dodge higher tariffs. In fact, he said it's a no-brainer. You increase the cost, people are going to try to find a way to avoid it. It's human nature.
Yes, it is. U.S. announces Chinese anti-ship missile tests. China fired at least one missile into the sea over the weekend and was expected to continue testing through a launch window that continued today. That's real interesting. I want to talk about that a little bit more come Monday, so we'll hold that and bring it to you. Well, I mean Friday.
I work all night, I work all day.
It seems like today is Friday, Dave.
Hey.
Have a great Independence Day to you and to everyone listening, and I want to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out and joining us today. So until then, be safe. Good night. And God bless.
Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man.